This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours, it will be ours. Oh, one day, when the war is won, we will be sure, we will be sure.
Hands to the heavens, no man, no weapon formed against, yes, glory is destined. Everyday women and men become legends. Sins that go against our skin become blessings. The movement is a rhythm to us. Freedom is like religion to us. Justice is juxtaposition in us. Justice for all just ain't specific enough. One son died, his spirit is revisiting us. True and living, living in us. Resistance is us. That's why Rosa sat on the bus. That's why we walked through Ferguson with our hands up. When it go down, we woman and man up. They say stay down, and we stand up. Shots, we on the ground. The camera panned up. King pointed to the mountaintop, and we ran up.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours, it will be ours. Oh, one day, when the war is won, we will be sure.
Good morning, welcome to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. You know my voice already, it's Levan Miller. Thank you so much for joining me. Listen to me, I have something I need to declare. If my grandmother was alive, she would look at you Bahamian woman with disdain. Why? Because it rained 1 million gallons of rain yesterday, and not a single Bahamian woman anywhere across this archipelago, with the exception of one that I ran into yesterday, cooked soup. Nobody cooked no soup. I called someone yesterday, and they told me they do turkey sauce. I said, what kind of blasphemous nonsense is this? What is happening to us? It is an unwritten rule passed down from the slaves that on the if as long as two clouds touch, you should start boiling the potato right away. It is a non-negotiable position that the salt beef should already be on. We should already have it pre-boiled. The only thing we should be waiting on at that point, like my Grammy would call it, is the spare rib. She never ever calls it spare ribs. I don't know why. And you just wait to boil that, because that one go in last. Because you got to boil the salt beef a couple of times. You got to boil the ham a couple of times. And you'll keep boiling them while you boil the peas, right? And you got to let the peas soak.
In the flavor.
Okay. So wait, listen to me, behaving women, under the sound of my voice. And I don't want to hear this whole leaving us being a sexist. Why can't the man cook it? Because it is a Bahamian woman tradition. That's why the man can't do it. All right? The Bahamian women would get up. They would put on what my grandmother referred to as her gown, and she would go in the kitchen and put the peas them in the water and let the peas them soak. Y'all know how to soak peas, or y'all only know how to take peas out of the can? And you let the peas soak for a little bit, and after the peas soak for a while, because if you don't let them soak, you have to boil them too long, and we ain't got that kind of gas, because we poor. All right? So you let the peas soak. You send for 3 pounds of salt beef. You put that on. You let that boil. You throw that out. You boil it again, depending on whether it's bone in or bone out. Bone out, you don't want to boil it too much because it could boil away. Bone in, she could take 3 solid boils before she get in the pot. All right, then you put the ham on. I don't like too much of the ham back. I like the chunks of ham. You tell the fella, make sure I don't give you too much of the ham back. And you boil that one good time. All right, a little bit of tomato paste, some thyme, some onion. You fry that down inside the pan. All right, if you got one piece of conch, you beat that. Throw that in there. You don't put the potato them in until after you done put all the other stuff in. You should have your flour already kneaded and sitting down under your clear bowl so you could watch it as it shine. Once the flour shines, see, because I don't feel like you all know how to do it, which is why you all keep not doing it when it rain, and I am taking umbrage with this now. When it rain, we ought to cook soup. This is a simple rule. Not written anywhere, It ought to be written in your heart, Behemoth Women. That's where it ought to be written. And so I'm going to tell you all today that I expect that when I leave this studio today, that when I leave this studio today, there will be many people out there that have cooked soup. Other than that, I'm revoking your Behemoth Woman card. Anyway, that's not what I'm here to talk about this morning. I'm actually here to talk about labor. I'm joined in the studio by one of the persons I think best suited to talk about labor. Bernard Evans is my guest this morning. He is the, what is the name of the union again?
President of the National Congress of Trade Unions of the
Bronx. I know it's the NCTU. I just don't remember what they stand for. Yes, yeah. Okay, so, Mr. Evans, good morning.
Good morning, sir. Good morning, audience. Good morning, Bahamas.
How have you been?
Super fantastic.
You know, you are one of the people in life that I've watched over the years that never gets old. Like, you continue to look the same way for 25 years.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you must be bathing in Akabia water.
Brittany, you heard that?
Tell Akabia send me the check.
My daughter keeps telling me, Daddy, I hope you see you getting old.
Okay. All right, it's good. These are interesting times, Bernard. Workers have had the greatest level of uncertainty I think we've ever seen in my lifetime, for sure. Possibly in your lifetime. 17 months, many of them have been furloughed beyond what the law has allowed. Many of them are now being severed. There are several instances where people are being released from work without full compensation. Where is the union on all of this? All right.
Let me just say first that this is our 60th year anniversary, Diamond Year, celebrating mm-hmm. Labor Day as a holiday. Mm-hmm. I just got off the phone with Saranda Folks' daughter, Lady Folks Jr., I call her, mm-hmm. Rose Lee. But labor's always been a struggle.
Okay.
It's always been. There have been good times, and these are now the bad times. If you look at, we try as best as we can to have legislation put in place to protect workers, even if you have industrial agreements, but there's a continuous violation of those laws, whether it be industrial relations mm-hmm. Laws, whether it be individual contracts, or whether it be the Constitution itself. Mm-hmm. And so clearly in this particular case with Atlantis, the law is clear. Once you separate somebody, they are to be paid their remunerations promptly. Mm-hmm. You hand over the letter of disengagement and you hand over the check, sometimes in the same letter or envelope, mm-hmm. or simultaneously you do the same.
So what would make them assume, Mr. Evans, that they have, I mean, why would they go against what would be the accepted norm?
Well, I think their claim was they did not have the funds at the time. Mm. And so they, given the amounts that they were supposed to give out to the almost 700 person plus, they came up or made a suggestion that they do it incrementally mm-hmm. Over a 3-month period, I believe. But it was up to the workers themselves to accept those conditions, to renege and say, you know what, I know you're supposed to give me all my money up front, but if you can't do it up front, all of it up front, but that ought to have been negotiated with the union,
right,
with Mr. Darren Woods and his executive team to negotiate such a deal. They should not have been in a position to impose that kind of agreement unilaterally, mm-hmm. as opposed to sitting down with the union and coming up with those recommendations. And so the union will be, you know, go back to their members and say, this is what they offer. Are you willing to accept it or not? Mm-hmm. Knowing full well that they had a right, meaning the workers, by law, that they, once they were severed, they were supposed to give in all their monies. Now, if I were representing or making a suggestion to them, I know coming out of that table, off that table, mm-hmm. as a union negotiator, would have been this. If you have X amount of money, then satisfy the group of persons, commensurate mm-hmm. with that amount of money, mm-hmm. and leave the other persons still on forelock until you get yet another group.
Right.
Because during the time of cessation, their benefits will continue to
grow. Correct.
So that's what she does. And I think they recognize that too. So that's perhaps why they didn't do it. Mm-hmm. But I spoke with the minister in the aftermath, after hearing about it, because a lot of persons thought that the 30-day penalty supposed to have been triggered, given that he did not get the notice, because I think there was a soundbite that he heard about it the day before. Mm-hmm. After speaking with him, he said no. He had communication with the hoteliers for some time, mm-hmm. and so the 30-day penalty fell away. Mm-hmm. So that's what we understand from that.
Well, then why is it that they are not arguing then? And this is just me. I'm not a trade unionist. I admire the work you all do. However, in many instances, the commercial banks, commercial lending institutions have done this thing where they've charged late fees and accruals of interest, etc., on monies owed. If the hotel wanted to take the position that they were going to need to pay people in installments, then there ought to have been some sort of accrual of interest at least considered in how they would compensate. Because you cannot take it upon yourself, one, to, you know, divert from the law, two, to inconvenience the life of this human being any further, and to three, assume that this human is just after 17 months in a state financially that he can sit by idly and wait to receive his money in increments. On the very merit of that alone, you ought to consider how do you compensate him. Do you believe that the union reached in far enough to ensure that its members got consideration for compensation for loss of time, pain and suffering, et cetera, et cetera?
No, they were not given the opportunity, save for really breaking down, marching over the bridge and breaking down the buildings and stuff of that nature. The unions did everything possible to try to get to the table, to have open dialogue, so that those things we talked about just now to ensure, to protect workers, mm-hmm. and how they were going to be separated from the company. If they were given that kind of information as opposed to being informed mm-hmm. of what is going to be done and what they're going to do and what was agreed upon, without the full discussion, without full dialogue, then the union pretty much was handcuffed in some respect. Mm. Speaking with Darren leading up to this, Darren was still, at that particular time, wanted to know who were the 700 persons by name. They had promised him that they would copy him in, or copy his union in to let them know. But that is not what I'm used to dealing with BTC at the time. It's the relationship that you have, the respect. I think that's the key word. The lack of respect that they have for the unions apparently is really under the floor. And so if they had that kind of dialogue, that kind of camaraderie where you can actually sit down and discuss things, then all of these things could have been meted out. Mm-hmm. How are you going to deal with those persons? Mm. All right. Because we are still under the emergency orders or what have you, some laws have been kind of eased up.
Right.
But I have asked, personally, we have asked the government also to ease some mm-hmm. laws as it relates to the employees to mm-hmm. ensure that their things are speed up mm-hmm. as well. All right. So as you give concessions on one side, you got to do it to on the other side to maintain the balance. And so for Mr. Woods, I would have to say that he have tried the best as he can, save for going over there and blowing up everything.
What do you say to people then, Mr. Evans, who say, you know, the time of unionism has outlived its shelf life. These unions don't seem to represent the interests of small people anymore. These unions don't seem to be able to get anything done anymore. These unions don't particularly protect you. It is only a farce that you live under the umbrella of unionism, and that in real times, when you expect your union to come to your aid and possibly during your time of being furloughed for a year, provide some financial assistance, during your time of being furloughed for a year, provide some sort of assistance towards, I don't know, food, etc. I think I've heard some people argue in the past. And now you have people that are members of a union who have their employer going completely contrary to the Employment Act. And it seems as though the union has all, for the lack of a better term, been busted and is in no position to do anything to defend the worker. What do you say to those people?
First, those observations and those speculations are on point. Mm-hmm. However, one must do a more intrinsic evaluation and go deeper mm-hmm. in understanding what's going on in the trade movement. From when we started, and if you just allow me a couple of minutes to lay out my position here. When we started as a people, way back in 1942, understanding that there was an injustice going on at the airport and different races of persons doing the same work was being double, in some cases triple for the same work. Mm-hmm. And our people decided that it was enough, and they came together and ushered in what we now know as Burma Road. But we know that there were loss of lives in that particular instance, and but we rose up as a people. Mm-hmm. Then some 12 years later, we got to 1958, the general strike. Similar, where omnibuses would go down and grab all the tourists that were coming in, and the taxi cab was only getting one or two fares and whatnot. And so that caused a general strike where everybody, again, rose up and stood up for justice. Well, the union somewhat have been a victim of its own success over the years, over the 79 years, in terms of all of the gains that we were able to get. For instance, holidays, sick pay, vacation pay, maternity leave, mm-hmm. paternity leave, mm-hmm. gratuity, pensions, et cetera. So the average Bahamian today, if you're under the age of 30, you would wake up and realize that, you know what, Friday coming is Labor Day. I'm going to be paid. It's a day off, I'll be paid.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you don't know the history behind that. We had to fight for that.
Mm-hmm.
And because you don't know the struggle that came with these benefits that we now have legislated, all right, we kind of look at unions and say, well, union work is done.
Mm-hmm.
No. These gains are slowly but surely, just as in the case of Atlantis, even though we ushered in the union, caused that once you separate me, you had to pay me in full.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is owed to me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that is a law on the books,
mm-hmm.
but it's been violated by employers. And it could start a domino effect for any other employer. If this employer get away with it, why wouldn't the next one get away with it?
Mm-hmm.
But then who are the guardian of the law? Shouldn't be being out for the people. The guardian of the people is supposed to be the Attorney General's office.
Mm-hmm.
Through the Ministry of Labor, ought to make sure that this doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? But like in the case when, I think about 3 or 4 years ago, when we advocated that for gratuity, if someone worked for more than 12 years, they ought to be given 2 weeks pay for every year of service, as in the case of some of our Caribbean brothers, in, for instance, in Antigua and Barbuda.
Mm-hmm.
If you work 20 years, 30 years, or 40 years, you get 2 weeks pay for each year that you're on the job.
Mm-hmm.
In this country, it doesn't matter any years over 12 years,
you're
not going to be compensated for
right.
it. Well, the first sector that put up their hands and say, hell no, was the hotel association. Mm-hmm. That they're not gonna we might as well close down. When you get that kind of threat, being a major contributor to the economy, being a major employer in the country, then you get governments who say, well, no, we'll hold back now. Okay, well, we won't pass this bill this time.
Mm-hmm.
And so it gets pushed back. Again, so the benefits or earned benefits that Bahamian people ought to get as a worker would always be stymied because of the power and that is lauded over even governments and the people themselves that somehow, you know, they want blame on pushing the envelope further.
Mm-hmm.
But the only thing left for us to do is to block again, as was done in the case of Burma Road, as was done in the case of the general strike.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see that happening again. You may say that union is finished or union has been weakened, but union is responsible for all of the benefits we now currently enjoy,
mm-hmm.
Whether you're a part of a union or not a part of a union. Union has been the champion. And now we have a body called the Tripartite Council,
mm-hmm.
where you have the labor representatives, you have the worker representatives, and you have the government sitting in unison trying to push legislation forward with a common thread of protecting the worker and, in the case of the employer, protecting them and the government being somewhat of a mediator to ensure a balance.
Mm-hmm.
And so we do have that body. And so we're able to get some things done through that entity, but the union's in no way silent and keep quiet or non-existent or need or it's not needed. If there ever is a time now for unity, it has always been constant, has always been necessary. And you would see when the time come when no one could take it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
As you see when the people took to the streets, that's a form of unity.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever there's a time for people to rise up as a people, they're going to do it. Okay? But don't just blame labor per se, because labor has always been fighting and trying to get the law to be on our side, or just to be fair.
Mm-hmm.
I just read one of Sarandon's message going back 60 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
He said he's the Minister of Labor, but he finds himself trying to protect the rich from the poor and trying to protect the poor from the rich. So he's wearing two hats.
Mm-hmm.
But he has a tendency to lean towards labor. Oftentimes when we put our directors in there who are from labor, but once they get in there, they find out that, hey, hold on, I have to protect the rich, I got to protect the poor,
mm-hmm.
and I got to start in the middle,
mm-hmm.
okay? But the point we're trying to advance or to advance is that labor continue to push for justice. Right now, if you have a grievance, if you have the aggrieved party, you go to the Labor Department, you have to go there 3 times for conciliation. That's mm-hmm. all they can do.
Mm-hmm.
They may say, you know what, Mr. Evans, you are wrong, your employee is right. You ought to make good and pay your employee.
Mm-hmm.
But that's only a recommendation that they can do.
Mm-hmm.
They can't enforce it. So all they can do is implore you and I to go back and try to work it out among ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
If we can't, they say, come back a second time. We wasn't worked out, we go back a second time. And they say, well, come back a third time. And after then, our dispute is then elevated to the Industrial Tribunal.
Mm-hmm.
The Industrial Tribunal, for Christ's sake, you would go there. And they say, Evans, you're wrong. The employee is right.
Mm-hmm.
But they can't force them to make good on the payment either. And so now you have to go sign the queue, if you have the monies, to find a lawyer to go to the Supreme Court.
Mm.
And so we've been asking, one, the Labor Department at the conciliation office. After the third conciliation, mm-hmm. if the labor finds that the employee is right, they should have the power up to a certain amount to say $5,000, for instance. Mm-hmm. All right? To say, well, they have a power up to that amount. So, like the Industrial Tribunal, they should have be elevated to the power of a Supreme Court mm-hmm. to be able to say, you know what, I rule in favor of the employee, so pay the employee. And not just make side with the employee and say, well, you're right.
Right.
They're right.
So all you basically build, you build is, you build footnotes for when you make it to the Supreme Court. That you get to say, conciliatory body said that I was right. The tribunal has said I'm right. I've now come to the Supreme Court. Right.
But now, I want to put a face now to this individual who has been aggrieved. Mm-hmm. You're talking about a maid mm-hmm. who have two or three little children. Mm-hmm. All this time, she's out of pocket.
Right.
All these months, she's out of pocket. Having now wait 6-7 months to get to the Industrial Tribunal.
You're talking about a young man with a brand new mortgage.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so that's the kind of point. We put a face to these problems. And so while you may have the time to say, yeah, we'll come back in 3 months, go come back in 6 months, oh, mm-hmm. now go to the Supreme Court. All this costs money and time. But that employee, in the meantime, the little child is just crying for mm-hmm. food to be put in his mouth, mm-hmm. for a fresh uniform, mm-hmm. to be able to do anything to keep the light on. And that's the suffering. And so labor has always been championing and trying to chop at these laws, trying to improve on these laws. But we can't do it on our own.
What I think has been the difficulty for a lot of people, Bernard, is over the last couple of months, everybody continues to talk about the position of the hotel. We've heard the director of labor, you know, on more than one occasion say, you know, where are the hotels going to get this money from? You know, if we sever all these people, you're looking at a situation, and I'm paraphrasing for him now, but these are generally his words. You're looking at a situation where the pandemic kind of goes away in 5 or 6 months and the people try to open back up, but they've just spent all kind of money in severance pays and packages, and now the hotel can't open up, and now you end up with a greater unemployment problem. Or what happens if we give the people their money and they squander it away, and that wouldn't help them in their positions any at all. And it seems as though every time the laborer got closer to the goalpost moved for them.
Keep on moving.
Particularly in this instance. And I'm trying to figure out, where is labor? Is labor pushing the post back towards the people? Because, you know, I even had the parliamentary secretary in the Ministry of Tourism sit right here across the table from me and tell me, you know, we had to consider the employer. We had to consider the employer. And he represents one of the poorest constituencies in this country. At what point are we going to see the people being represented or considered with the level of
We've long advocated for workers' representative to sit in on these so-called heads of agreement. Mm-hmm. Whenever you have a foreign direct investor that comes in, I believe the reason why we let them in is there's supposed to be a benefit mm-hmm. for the Bahamian as a worker mm-hmm. And for the economy. If you come in and you can't provide certain protections or certain securities, then it becomes just, no, Mr. Investor, you're not good for us.
Right.
We can't have an investor come in and don't put aside, say, you know what, there will be difficult times. There mm-hmm. may be times. Well, in good times, we'll just put away certain monies as reserve and some kind of escrow that the government also have some kind of, not control to go move the monies, mm-hmm. but have a special board set up that for times such as this. Mm-hmm. You shouldn't be any surprise that you just run the hotel dry, because we know we have shareholders
right.
and they could care lick about how much the suffering
is. I imagine they at least have an overdraft facility.
Yeah, you would think, because mm-hmm. the average CEO still to this day make 3,000 times the base wage of the employee. Mm-hmm. All right, that's an international standard. The average CEO of a company, Fortune 500, mm-hmm. still makes on average 3,000 times. Base salary of the employee, okay? And so what I'm saying is, you can't tell me that the person who own Atlantis, right, can't find $3 or $4 or $5 million or whatever it is. They don't have a credit, some kind of line of credit to be able to draw that down.
Right, and what about indemnity insurance? I mean,
any matter, but this should have been placed in at the heads of agreement. I understand the Permanent Secretary of the Ministry of Tourism. You have to look out for the employer. Yes, you have to. But when you sit down on the table before they broke ground, you're supposed to have some stipulations, some prerequisites, some conditionalities. Mm-hmm. So those conditionalities should be about protecting the Bahamian worker. Mm-hmm. Okay? To say, you know what? At some point, you won't park up and leave. Well, we want to ensure that while you're here, every year, we're going to monitor this escrow fund just in case you park up and leave, mm-hmm. or just in case something like this happened where you have to let some people go. So that money is set aside. Mm-hmm. Okay? Not for anybody to dip in, not for the government or the employer, or the employees for that matter, mm-hmm. but just keep it in escrow.
Like a private insurer.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So that when that day happens, then you go ahead and you're able to satisfy the persons. Mm. But like I say, if you can't satisfy all the people, then you know, by law, then hold on to those persons so that their benefit is accrued or interest while they continue to wait for their monies.
What do you say? Sorry, go on. Right.
And for persons to say, there are some people who say, you know what, I don't mind getting installments. But some people say, listen, I'm ready to cut. As by law, give me.
Right, because that's the question I was about to ask you next. What do you say to the person that is sitting out there that says to you, you know what, Bernard, I haven't worked in 17 months. Mm-hmm. I've learned to peddle my own cheese wheel now. You know what I mean? They gave me a bowl of milk. I've almost got a bowl of cheese now. I really just want these people from around me. They owe me money. I want the money that they owe me, and I want to come from around them. What do you say to people like them that says, I'm not taking an installment payment. I'm not signing the paper that says that I'm going to accept an installment. How do those people prevent themselves from victimization?
Again, unfortunately, you go back to the law. You have to take them to court. Mm. Because once they give you your separation papers, and you line it up with the law says a check should come with it.
Right.
All. And so you could not take that to court. That's their only recourse right now.
Mm.
All right. They might want to take it to the Labor Department again if they wait another 3 months. And obviously, even if you take it to court, you probably have to wait another 3 months. And by that time, the employer would have made good on their payments over the three-month period while you're waiting for a court date.
Mm-hmm.
So it's unfortunate that that is indeed the case. But I think our investment board, really, this ought to have been, this now is a lesson for us to learn something from this.
Mm-hmm.
That we talked about it long enough, and the time has come now for us to protect the Bahamian workers. That in such a time as this, disasters or whatever it is, that we do have some kind of reinsurance, all right? Because the companies do make monies every year when in good times, record rares of things, of returns that they have. Take some of that money and put it aside for the rough times or times when you have to disengage persons.
What about this conversation? I haven't been able to verify it yet. Some people have told me yes, some people have told me no. What about this conversation about direct deposits being made to people's bank accounts? I don't think it's illegal, but isn't there a taint of unethical behavior there as far as the companies are concerned?
I really can't speak to exactly how the payments are done at Atlantis per se,
mm-hmm.
but I do know that the establishment that I worked made direct payments to the bank, to my bank account.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty much normal.
Has that been the common practice? Because as far as I am advised,
go ahead.
What typically happens in the hotel industry is you show up, you bring their uniform, they give you your letter of redundancy or termination. When you hand them their uniform and name tally and all that other stuff, they hand you an envelope with a check in it. Why do you imagine they would have gone away from that?
Again, I can't speak to that. I wouldn't stand and speak to that. I'm not sure that's how it works. Mm. But I understand that from what I heard, and I started to be corrected on this, made that disclaimer, that checks were sent directly to some banking institution
mm-hmm.
Where there was a lien on the person's account because some of
them... Automatically, I haven't been employed in 17 months. Yeah, ain't a lien. That's a fall down by that point.
But again.
But that's unethical.
Yeah,
though,
but
isn't
I,
it,
but, I, but I, again, when the pandemic started, right, there was a task force where labor was invited to be a part of,
mm-hmm.
and one of the arguments we have is, what are we going to do with these persons who now the hotel has sent them home, or other entities have slowed and sent their employees home? What's going to happen with their obligations to the bank? And that is where the whole notion that they had the 3 months or the 6 months cessation of bills, that they didn't have to pay the bills and all that stuff. The same with utilities. If you remember, during the first 6 months, I believe, of the pandemic, when there was this lockdown and people really couldn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that is when you sit around the table and you have all of the heads and you do have labor representatives and all that stuff. And that's what I'm going back to again. Mm-hmm. When you have this tripartite model, where you have everybody at the table, then again, even with these checks coming to these persons, it could have been worked out where they could meet or have some representative from the banks to say from the banking association to say, listen now, please, these people are separate. Don't take all of the monies mm-hmm. from them. You know, let's sit down and see how much work with that that employee or that individual to see how much they can afford.
Right.
Please just don't take
all because of the money. Here's what I argue, right?
Yeah.
It is, and here's why I call it unethical. 17 months ago, this man would not have been in a position where he owed the bank what he owes the bank. The bank, because the bank is the creature that it is, will continue to accrue interest as forever long as this thing runs on. Believe it or not, that creature is so avaricious that he will also continue to tack on silly things like late payment fees and okay. When my money hit the bank or hits the bank, it's going to have all of those things considered, which means I'm going to pay the bank hundreds of dollars that I do not technically owe them, right?
Okay.
Not that I have borrowed or that I have had calculated as my initial interest. I don't think we considered that when we allowed these people's money to find its way in a lending institution. Plus, if you were intending to send my money to a bank, then why did you not sever me 17 months ago when I didn't owe a bank this amount of money? Would it not have been better for me to take my package when my balances were at zero, and at least I could now set my footing differently? It is an unethical practice.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. But I think 17 months ago, they were under the impression, I was told, that they were very, very reluctant to let their staff go, and they thought.
But that is a calculation. Like, that is a calculation.
It was a calculation risk on their part.
And again, who pays for it?
That they were trying to be humanistic and say, you know, we're going to try to hold on to our staff as long as we can. But it's unfortunate how the ending happened. It could have happened much, much better. Mm. And I believe had they involved Mr. Darren Woods and his team, it could have been a much, much, much better result. So yielded much better results.
Let's shift gears. There's something else I want to talk to you. There appears to be a passive-aggressive mandatory vaccination policy. The hotels aren't particularly screaming or advertising as a vaccination campaign. What they are suggesting is that today they do free testing. Those persons that refuse vaccination will, from a certain point on, have to then pay for their own testing. I can't imagine that being correct because, I mean, if I have to pay for my own testing, I imagine I would have to pay for my own apron or my own pen or my own shoe. Or the reason why the hotel provides me with these things is because it is a condition of my employment. It is a standard of my employment. We are in a pandemic regime. Mm-hmm. Being tested for COVID-19 ought to be a standard condition of my employment. How are we making the employees pay for this? It doesn't add up to me.
No, it shouldn't. It shouldn't.
Unless, of course, this is you passively aggressive pushing a vaccination campaign.
Yeah, understand that we do have an administration, but the competent authority who is really pushing and mandating that we get vaccinated.
Mm-hmm.
That has been a public utterance of that from that authority's office. Mm-hmm. But the law does not suggest that anybody it is mandatory that you be vaccinated for any job. That's a that's pure discrimination.
Right.
Okay. And so anybody who's being made to pay as a condition of employment out of pocket, right, ought to seek redress right away so that monies could be recouped at some point. But no way in any way, shape, or form, unless the law changes in the parliament that make it mandatory that you have to do X, Y, and Z and make it mandatory that you have to pay
for
so-called X, Y, and Z, then you're in violation and contravention of the law. And so I can only ask for any employee that may be going through that that they please bring it to the relevant representatives and to a lawyer, all right? And they should not be victimized if they do so under those guides that they're trying to redress a concern that's causing them out of pocket and also causing them to be in their bodies being invaded by some foreign, substance.
By some emergency rated vaccine,
that they're not comfortable with. And so this is something that the competent authority will have to deal with from a parliamentary standpoint. They must now go and make a decision. If it's going to be mandatory, it's going to be mandatory. And if it is mandatory, see if you can get it passed. And if you do get it passed, then make sure that the payment with it also is waived and that is not borne on the people. Mm. Right? But right now, I don't see that coming to light as a policy or a law.
Mm.
Not a policy, but a law. I can't see it coming as a law.
And you don't think that the hotels requiring people to pay for their own PCR testing, the people that refuse to be vaccinated, that is, to pay for their own PCR testing, you don't see that as a subtle policy position?
It is a policy position. Mm. However, it's not law.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I'm saying is policies don't have to be followed, particularly if it's dealing with one, your monies. No one have a right to deduct money without your your consent, okay? And certainly no one have a right to tell you need to inject something in your body as a prerequisite for employment. And so I think they have a clear case there to stand up from a human rights perspective and from a labor rights perspective and for and from a constitutional right perspective. So they got a three big rights on their side, and shouldn't be allowed to get away with it. But again, this will be asked that while labor representatives stand up and shine light on the injustices going on, all right, we would hope, too, that the government hold our hands and be an armor bearer and say, you know what, employer, you're absolutely wrong. We're not going to allow this, because now we'll start a trend for any other employer to do likewise. Mm-hmm. And I dare you to say, well, I can't do it, and you allow a big ship like Atlantis to do it, or any other employer for that matter to do it, or to get away with it.
Mm. Yeah. I like talking to you, but I want to make sure people don't say that I buffered you, so I'm going to open these phone lines. The phone numbers you can call me on are 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259. I'm telling you, if I let you sit in here for one whole hour and not open the phone lines, they're going to say, oh, you protect, but not. Anyway, I hear my music. I'm going to the break. When I get back, the phone lines are open. That's 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259. You can text me on 4224796. Mr. Bernard Evans is my guest. He's the current president of the NCTU. Listen, these unions got plenty letters. I can't remember all of them. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back after the break.
In life, there are always challenges. Today, we find ourselves having to be more self-sufficient, socially aware, and technically savvy. At J.S. Johnson, we are committed to our customers by providing cost-effective insurance solutions. No matter what your insurance needs, we will always be here for you. Call 397-2100 or visit jsjohnson.com. J.S. Johnson Insurance Agents and Brokers, giving you peace of mind.
Meet Jackie. Jackie's a hard worker with a steady income, but she has a personal loan and multiple credit cards to pay off. To keep her account current, Jackie opted for a loan from Fidelity Bank to consolidate her debt into one monthly payment and earn interest on a built-in savings account. Be like Jackie. Call 356-7764 to book a complimentary financial coaching session. Fidelity also offers virtual assistance. Fidelity. We're good for you.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Welcome back. Thank you so much for joining me. Levin Miller is here. Thank you for staying with us. This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. I'm joined in the studio this morning by Mr. Bernard Evans, the current president of the NCTU, as we talk labor on this week leading up to Labor Day. Man, listen, you know, I tell them, Bernard, Bahamians are a special group of people. We don't particularly care what you call the holiday as long as we ain't got to go to work and someone throw a little soiree somewhere, we could be there. So I stand with you in solidarity for this Friday. Thank you for the day off. And we hope that the labor movement is able to accomplish a whole lot more in the years to come. Let's open up the phone lines. Put those headphones on for me, please. Good morning, caller. You're on.
Hey, Sam. You're on.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, Sam, I wanted to ask the gentleman there, mm-hmm. How come, how long it takes for them to have a
How long will the government give the union, not the government,
because you know they're saying that the government give Bahama certain times to get itself together before the union get it.
But not.
thanks for the calls, caller. From what I understand, but this is the law that the Constitution says everybody have a right to work. The Constitution also says that everybody have a right to form themselves into a union, a labor union. We have an act that governs all unions or all industrial relations that unions must follow. Once you have 50+1% of the persons who are polled, conducted by the Ministry of Labor, that they want to join a union, they want to form themselves into a union. Once that 50% is recognized, the Department of Labor, through the minister, must grant a letter of recognition. That letter of recognition would then go to the employer and say, listen, they have the workers in your area or in your shop have satisfied the Ministry of Labor by the majority that they want to form themselves into a union, you must now sit down and negotiate and meet out an industrial agreement between them and the worker. I can't for the life of me saying that the same employees, majority of them, at the beginning came from Malia or what was then, what was the name of the hotel?
Wasn't it the Marriott? No, not the Marriott.
Because it has many names, so we don't talk about, right?
The plenty name hotel.
Yes. But I cannot see for the life of me how, and we have this difficulty. It's also with KO Bahamas. Almost 27, almost 30 years now, however long KO Bahamas was here. We had more than 50%. Only asking now the government, the minister did ratify, but the employer refused to come to the table. And by law, they're in violation not to be prosecuted, not by the union, prosecuted by the Department of Labor. These employees should go before. In some cases, there's a monetary fine or imprisonment. But for some reason, these employers, I'm assuming because of the vast number of employment that they do represent, that they do employ, that they somehow say, you know what, we either going to have an establishment, I know what your law says, but we don't want no union in our area, in our shop. We don't want no unions here. And if we have to have a union, we're going to fold up shop and leave. I have to believe that's the only reason why the government is not imposing its own law for the benefit of its people. And so I can't speak specifically to Bahama to find out how long or what's going on, but I can tell you from what my experience has been, that has always been the case. We do have ratification for a lot of these areas, but when time to sit down, as the law provides, to sit down to meet out an industrial agreement between the employees and the management or the employer refuse to come to the table. We go and we make representation to the Department of Labor to saying that these employees refuse to come to the table, but nothing is done. They're not dragged before the court as the Department of Labor is supposed to do, so that they can answer to these charges or at least spend time in jail. Mm. So unfortunately, that is the case.
That's a heavy penalty. Let me read a couple of these text messages. Someone says, "Hi, are you?" No, Bahamian women still exist. I'm not saying that Bahamian women don't exist, because I don't want y'all to kill me. I know how y'all
me
go.
For that soup?
Yeah. The banks are predators. When I was let go, I had just paid off my loans. They said I could not borrow money on furlough, but now that my check just reached, they have called me to offer me 1.5% times my payoff. I do not need it now. Okay. The name of the hotel is the Radisson. Someone else here is saying that the name of the hotel was the Radisson. This other one says, Levin, good morning. You and your guests, the union leaders today are using thousands of dollars in court fees rather than settling out of court or using their powers to shut down or withdraw labor. If the employer is allowed to break the law, then by the same token, the employee has the right to break the law. The present Minister of Labor has in the past have always leaned on the side of the larger employers to say that we was not properly notified is contrary to the law. Same old tactics. Even the vaccines are for emergency use only. To make this experimental drug mandatory, are they going to accept the liability if there are adverse effects or even death? I don't think you could answer any of those questions. Let's take another phone call. Good morning, caller. You're on. Caller, you there?
Yes, sir.
Hey, you're on.
All right, Mr. Miller. Mr. Evans. Hey, Mr. Evans. Everything cool?
Yes, sir.
All right, Bob here. Mr. Evans, any changes on the route? Any changes because of the COVID? Like with the crowd, you know, the political parties and everything has come up. The truck driver with the people in the back. Any changes? Like, I have to listen. Keep up the good work.
All right, thank you, Baba. Let's take one moment now. Good morning, caller. You're on.
Good morning, Mr. Miller.
Hey.
I caught your show sort of late, so I can't speak authoritatively to anything that you've discussed.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I do have this question for Mr. Evans. He's from Andrews, and he better get it right. He won't be able to travel back to Andrews ever.
Are you going
to
revoke his Andrews card?
Yeah, tell him I'm Riley, so you know he can't come back Andrews.
Definitely.
But my thing is this. The people at Bahama only get a half hour for lunch, but the Constitution says that the people of the Bahamas shall not be exploited for their labor. Why is it that a lunch hour that's been reduced, that's the common practice in this country, was allowed to be removed so that a company coming here, and I will stop, could give the employees half hour for lunch And if they don't want it, they don't get a job. But more importantly, they just dismissed their director of security, Mr. Bo. And they kept a fellow from Iraq and Turkey here as directors of security and vice president. How is it that the labor board could allow Bahamians to go home with no money to feed their families, but keep these persons here who knew nothing of security? There was a person that was responsible for the security of your country. And you're saying that he can't manage a security company in the hotel?
Mm.
I would like for him to answer so that he could give me some clarity as to why there's not another permanent road march to really say to anyone coming to this country, we don't mind you wanting to invest. When they go to China, they abide by all rules of the Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
When they go to any Arab country, they abide by all rules of the Arab country. How come Bahamians are exploited? Thanks.
Thank you very much. Well, Bernard, you here, you better get it right or you can't go back to Andrews. So that is a tall order. What do you say to the caller?
Caller, thanks. Look to see you home soon. All right?
Mm-hmm.
Listen, I can't speak the issue, and we always have this, you know. Well, I think when foreign direct investors come in the country, based on the heads of agreement, there's a certain amount, I don't know what the percentage is, and it may vary from employer or investor to investor. But certainly there are some provisions where some key positions are left for the foreign investor to fill. I believe with the endorsement of the government or whatever entity they have.
But he's saying they sent Mr. Bohome as head of security.
Now, we don't know the condition under which they sent Mr. Bohome. And I think what he's suggesting is if Mr. Bo, I'm not saying that he's saying this, let's just assume that there was a reason why they let Mr. Bo go. Then that position ought to be filled with another Bahamian.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what we're saying, that it shouldn't really be filled with any other ethnicity other than a Bahamian. That's mm-hmm. why I'm saying, and I've always suggested and lamented, that these heads of agreement, once they come as a possible investment, everything about that investment should be about a Bahamian worker
mm-hmm.
for us to benefit as the most out of it. And even those positions that we can't do or we don't have the expertise for, there should be a Bahamian to understudy or Bahamians to understudy that particular worker, the foreign worker, for a year, two, three, four, five, however long it takes for us to get it. Once we are satisfied that we can do this work, then we need to say goodbye to that particular foreign worker and say, thank you very much. We now have the expertise, a resident, and we can do it for ourselves. I have no problem. I don't think no Bahamian have an issue that you bring foreigners in here who could, to do some work that we can't do. But we should have a policy where we have our people understudy and take that program into the University of the Bahamas so we can now have persons to learn that specific job.
Mm-hmm.
And so that the next time, the next opportunity come around, that new person don't need to come into the country. We now can choose. You can choose, Mr. Investor, from our
Bahamian populace.
Yes, who we have trained and ready to do that job. But as for when we run the next time, as soon as our people are angry enough or fed up enough, trust me, the march will begin.
Bernard Evans, that's my music. That means I'm out of time. Let me
out of time?
I'm out of time. It's 1 hour.
Come on.
I want you to write and tell them, give me one more and see what happens.
Yeah, happy Labor Day. Listen, we have petitioned the Commissioner of Police and through to the competent authority mm-hmm. for us to have a motorcade. We have yet to receive anything. At least I haven't received anything formally. Only to hear that the Prime Minister was not engaged or the competent authority was not mindful to want to grant us to have a motorcade. We believe that a motorcade would have been safe since we didn't have a march last year. We thought it would have been, you know, safer this time around mm-hmm. that we could execute. Because we have seen political parties in droves not exercising their spacing and all that stuff. And mm-hmm. they out there campaigning house to house. Who knows? They may be spreading.
You should have agreed put on a red or yellow T-shirt.
And then we would have the motorcade?
Yeah. Anyway, that's my time. Bernard Evans has been my guest. I'm Levin Miller. It's Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, the station for fresh news and smart talk. Don't move. They've got the news. It's next.